Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Tom, how do you feel about the number one contendership women's match set for next week after two triple threat matches tonight with especially Alexa Bliss winning in the main event, set up now to face Bayley as opposed to Becky Lynch, which certainly they hinted at. Did that surprise you at all?
It did. Becky and Bayley having the promo segments before the first of the triple threats really seems to give away that, okay, Bayley and Becky are winning here because that's where the story is. And that still is where the story is, but in a different way than I expected and in a more interesting way than I was expecting.
Yeah, so what do you make of it? What do you expect to see? And is this where we get some progress in terms of Alexa Bliss's character and the Lily Doll and, you know, Graves even in commentary talking about how she doesn't seem to be as aggressive or have a sense of urgency that he thinks she should have? And, of course, then the obvious Bray Wyatt monitor flashes. Is that a match, or maybe they forward that storyline to the next level?
Yeah, the lack of urgency that Graves is calling out. And you know, I wouldn't know where her conditioning is at right now, but it certainly, you know, his call definitely fits the action that we're seeing in the ring from her. And yeah, that is exactly what I was thinking. I don't know if Bray's story is at a point right now where he's going to be gaining allies in this very moment, but what better place for Alexa to finally turn back to his side than at the top in a championship match?
Yeah, exactly. This show, I think, did show off, or I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, present a good idea of what the depth and the place of the top women are right now. And, you know, what Asuka's role currently is. Ripley on the upswing, including, you know, the stare down with Ripley and Becky. And then, you know, in the main event, with Nikki Cross kind of in her role more as a supporting player, Alexa Bliss, there's intrigue and she got a big win. Becky, it goes without say, top star. They're not, you know, in any way defining her down. Did anything surprise you or about how the women were portrayed, not just in terms of the obvious stuff, but even commentary and how much offense they got or anything like that, that steered you in a different direction in terms of where you think they're heading?
No. Oh, this is classic Paul Levesque women's division booking, where when he decides he's going to give the women's division a spotlight, he picks the people he believes in, and he carves out the chunk of time that he's going to give them, and he basically says, okay, go. Go out there and prove to the world everything I already know is true about you. And especially with the first triple threat, that's the sense that we got, and we saw him do that a number of times in big NXT spots, especially in multi-person matches. For example, the Fatal Four Way on the first ever live on USA edition of NXT as a major example. I thought, yep, this is the Paul Levesque I know.
And then we had Candice LeRae getting a promo, some interaction with Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis, leading to Corey Graves saying he thinks he's a little weirded out by the dynamic between those three, and he thinks it's something out of Backpage. I think that's a dated reference by this point. Maybe not. I'm not certainly fully up on the Backpage and the vernacular and where it is now. But what are your thoughts on how they're utilizing Candice LeRae at this point?
Oh, dear. I guess I'm going to have to search for something different to say about Candice than I really think she's just going to continue being the new Natalya, especially already coming in. You know, Natalya is a cat mom, but, you know, with Candice being a human mom, it even backstage, it just seems like that's the role, and that's how I expect her to be booked as well. So I don't know. We'll see if they subvert my expectations.
Yeah. In terms of match quality in the triple threat matches, did either of the two matches jump out as remarkably better or different than the other? Both had plenty of time to tell a story.
Well, the first one, just when they announced who the competitors were going to be, you know, I announced an expletive from my couch because I just, you know, that's a WrestleMania caliber match to me, with just NXT royalty in those three who are still doing very well for themselves to varying degrees and still to varying degrees have promising futures ahead of them. And I loved the idea of, regardless of how the match went, just seeing those three clash, even on short notice. And I thought the match really lived up to it. You know, not it's definitely they knew it was a Monday Night Raw and not a WrestleMania, but I really, really just gobbled up everything that they did, including the Becky and Rhea moment that you pointed out, which, you know, they just like they did at War Games, they're making sure that we notice there is, you know, a collision course there, but they are making sure to keep them away from one another so far. So that's going to be, you know, they know that that's going to be big when it happens. So they want us to feel the same way. And that was probably the moment. No, definitely the moment of the whole show was that stare down. And as for the main event, you know, I can't really complain. It wasn't phenomenal, but I think the deliberate choice of yet keeping Rhea and Becky away from one another right now, but putting Becky in there with two people who are lower on the in the pecking order than the people in the first triple threat, I think it's just a conscious choice that the story with Becky until the angle toward the end, the story with Becky right now is that she's back and she's a star, and we don't need more than that right now. We can just relish, hey, there she is, and that's enough for now. But I am looking forward to, now that we saw that at War Games and we saw that tonight, moving forward with more of a storyline behind it with what happened later in the match.
The Bayley-Becky interaction, did this seem to bring out something in Bayley on the mic and in terms of her character in this you know, relatively lengthy exchange between the two of them, from what you've seen from her prior to it?
Yeah, I would probably say this is Bayley's. Every time they're in the same segment,
Bayley,
together,
Becky,
I do that.
Bliss, Bianca. I mean, come on, WWE, let's change
yep.
it up.
I'm trying to think of a lame joke. But yeah, you know, you need more people with only first names. no, Bayley, this is her high point that we saw tonight on the microphone since returning with Damage Control. It, you know, Becky is somebody that she has been on and off intertwined with for over 8 years now. You know, on 8 years back on VIP, Kelly Wells and I are currently covering a Four Horsewomen storyline that includes Bayley and Becky being on opposite sides from one another quite often. And this felt real in the way that you want it to feel real. It felt real without breaking the fourth wall. It felt like these were two human beings that were talking to one another about where they are in their careers and how that could lead to a clash between them. And I was able to buy into it without sitting back and stroking my chin the way I usually do, like, oh yes, I see what they're doing with this wrestling angle, and not feeling like, ooh, they went there by talking about booking or whatever. It rode the line beautifully of seeming like a real conversation that was forwarding the story that they want to tell on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Bayley seemed more engaged, more sure of her character. And it just felt like she needed to perform in front of Becky, you know, and rise to the occasion. So overall, I mean, a lot of, you know, we're leading with the women on the discussion here, cause there was a lot of women's content on this show. I mean, I don't know if anyone, probably someone keeps track of these stats, how many segments, talking segments and in-ring segments added up minute-wise compared to other Raws. But this was on the highest end of what I can recall in terms of women content on an episode of Raw.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course we had Dana Brooke and Tamina in the poker tournament as well.
That's true. That's true. And that does count. It does count. There they are. All right. Let's pause and introduce ourselves And we got a lot more to cover on today's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 5th, 2022. And we're live streaming right after Raw went off the air. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a bevy of podcasts. I actually don't know what bevy means. People say it. What does bevy mean?
I think it's like a lot, but not like an overwhelming amount.
Oh,
I
this
do
applies.
Like the word.
You do like the word?
Yeah, I do use it myself.
Yeah, it's a large group of people or things of a particular kind. So that certainly applies. I'm part of a bevy of podcasts, free and VIP exclusive. For information on all the VIP benefits and all the VIP exclusive podcasts, go to pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. And all our free shows are available on our VIP feed, but they're versions of the shows with the ads and plugs edited out. So it's a streamlined listening experience, and then you also get access to 20 years of podcast archives, or close to 20 years now. We're even running on a regular basis now our 18 years ago podcasts, which is some of the earliest surviving pro wrestling podcasts you'll find anywhere. And we're covering right now, today and tomorrow, it's my Wade Keller Hotlines with a ton of backstage news on Dusty Rhodes getting the TNA booking job and what the reaction was amongst wrestlers, what he said to them backstage, how Jeff Jarrett was reacting, all kinds of politics there, and also the Rene Dupree-Bob Holly incident at the Syracuse New York House show, where Holly was upset with Rene for wrecking his rental car, whatever the story was on that. I've interviewed Bob Holly about it. He wrote about it in his book. You can listen to my contemporaneous reporting when that story broke 18 years ago and get a ton of additional details. I was listening back to both of those today. I get less work done because I put up these old shows and I'm like, oh yeah, what did I have to say about that story? And what were my thoughts on Randy Orton's potential as a future star, and how right or wrong was I about Batista? So one of the perks that goes with VIP membership, check that out. The other voice you hear is Tom Staupp. And speaking of VIP benefits, Tom, you contribute to a couple of VIP exclusive shows also. Tell our listeners about that, and hello and welcome.
Yes, thank you. Your flashback stuff sounds great, Wade, but let's keep it snappy. I've got some B-list celebrities playing bar games that I've really got to get back to the TV and watch tonight. They were pushing that hard. There is a part of me that hopes I can listen back to my own podcasts on Torch VIP in a similar way and think, you know, look at someone like, I'm picking a random name, Kale Dixon, who recently debuted on a house show for NXT, and maybe he makes it and he's on a big show one day, and I can look back and see what I thought of him back at his debut on Bonus Point on Torch VIP. That is the monthly podcast that I do hope people are listening to, because I am covering in depth the earliest phases of the WWE developmental journey. And Kale Dixon did indeed debut on a house show recently, and I give you a detailed breakdown of that, as well as Valerie Lareda's mixed tag match, along with audio of the first ever time that she was announced in front of a crowd with her new wrestling name, and so on and so forth. Just yesterday, I watched a two-hour-long segment of a powerlifting competition that the Performance Center strength and conditioning coach was participating in, just so I can talk about it for 60 seconds on the next episode of Bonus Point. So these are the kind of things that I am aggregating, so you, dear listener, don't have to. And you can collect your bonus point at the end of each month on Torch VIP. And I already mentioned 8 years back. I'll pass through it quickly, although it does warrant particular mention this time, because the next episode that will drop is about Our Evolution, the takeover event that I believe I only watched in full the one time live, but ever since have continued to refer to as NXT's finest moment. So now Kelly Wells and I will be revisiting that jewel in NXT's history and seeing how we feel about it now, 8 years later.
That's so cool. I talk about our archives and looking at the past, and then you can just pivot and say 18 years from now. What I'm saying today about the future stars look like. Is there a Randy Orton or a Batista in there that is getting their probably their earliest coverage ever? any kind of analysis, it's probably coming from Bonus Point.
Yeah, and there are four or five names that listeners will know that I am pretty darn excited about now. I'll briefly mention the name Miles Bourne and leave it at that.
So let's give out the phone number, encourage people who are listening live to participate in the show. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You are welcome to give us a call. When you do, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be brought onto the show. You can also just call that number and listen in if that's easier for you than streaming it over the internet. But you can find our live stream. There's a link at the top and bottom of my reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and also on Twitter at PWTorch. And you can also just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's easy to remember, Wade Keller Post Show. And navigate to the link to the live stream. So lots of ways to find the live stream and just listen right afterwards. Get your wrestling and analysis fix right after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We're live roughly 5 minutes after the shows go off the air. And you can also email the show if that's easier for you, especially if you don't have time to listen live right after Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown. The email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can ask questions, vent, rant, compliment, whatever you want, and be part of the show. All right. I think that covers the basis. So let's move on with other conversation. We'll actually start with area code 202. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from, 202.
This is Willis from Washington, D.C. I actually just came from Monday Night Raw, so I'm in the subway tunnel, so hopefully I don't get cut off on this cold call. Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad you could make it work.
Yeah, it was an okay show, but it just nobody feels like a star on it anymore. The only person that really feels like a star is Rollins, and on the women's side is Becky Lynch. But other than that, I only paid $40 for the ticket, and it felt like a $40 show.
Interesting. So Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, two stars that jumped out to you. I'm kind of scrolling through to see who I would think would count as number three. WWE hopes you think it's Austin Theory. AJ Styles hopes you think it's him. But I can, and I would say the Usos, Matt Riddle and Kevin Owens would probably be high up on that list. But you're saying no to all those names, or who comes closest to seeming like a star among those, Willis, that I mentioned, in terms of your thoughts on them, but also the crowd reaction in the building tonight?
The crowd reaction was kind of tepid most of the show. They was excited for KO when they came out, but they came alive for Seth when he came out. And actually, during the show, they were more excited when they was doing the signs for DX. They had the, you know how they do like the kiss cam and stuff like that? The fans got more excited doing that than the actual matches itself. So
that is not
good. It was a lot of kids there and a lot of parents. I've seen some of the kids get excited for the people, but it just wasn't the same like when I used to go when Rock and Austin and all of them was on the show and Cena. It was more exciting going to a Raw or a SmackDown when they was on the roster. This roster feels watered down. I think if Roman was there, they probably would have got more excited for him because they basically made him the only person that really matters in WWE right now. So, but I've been to a few AEW shows that they had in the area, and the crowd seemed more excited at the AEW shows than it is at the WWE shows.
Well, Willis, I will say there's probably a handful of people, especially kids in the audience tonight, who in 20, 25 years, whatever the forum and format is, will be expressing how much bigger and better WWE was in 2022 when they first started going with Bloodline and Becky Lynch and Bayley than what they're suffering through in the year 2045. That is a thing. But the big but is you are also comparing it to pretty much the most red-hot time for WWE ever and that is Austin and Rock. And so I think from a comparison standpoint, you're right. But there is something that just seems to happen with people where, you know, their earlier fandom turns out they think that the modern era pales in comparison. But all that said, it's red hot as I think the Bloodline is. It's really interesting getting an in-person perspective like yours tonight in terms of how much of the what I think is really good acting, really good writing, and good matches that the Bloodline are involved in translates to a big event feel when they first come out. So this is all kind of leading to my question, which is, tell me about the reaction to the Bloodline entrance, to Sami Zayn especially, and the dynamic with Sami and the Usos. And then finally, Solo Sikoa too. Did people ooh and ah with him, and did it seem like he was a rising star?
Well, the Usos is hot. They come out, people get excited for them, but they're really excited about Sami Zayn. Sami got a lot of chance on the show. Sikoa, he basically did all of Umaga stuff, so people was kind of excited for that, for those who knew who Umaga was. But it was just a quiet moment when he beat up Riddle. So a couple of people chanted, do it again, but not that many.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Sam, just talk about the ebb and flow of how people reacted to Sami. I assume all eyes were on him at times, even during the match.
Yeah, they was basically cheering Sami Uso anytime he did something or anytime Kevin Owens get near him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Sami seems like he's the hottest out of the set that was out there.
Tom, do you have a question for Willis?
You know, I'll comment that, you know, because I always make these SNL comparisons, and, you know, I don't remember the exact quote, but something Lorne Michaels says is that the best cast is always just the one that you grew up with. You know, Dana Carvey has his own version of that where he says the best cast is the one that was on when you were 10 years old. And, you know, it's really tough to compare to the special vintage that it was just so special with that original cast. At the time, I was born 9 years after that point, so I can't say for myself, but, you know, you watch those episodes and you feel it. And nobody can really compare to when, like, Carvey and Farley and Myers and Miller and so on were all on the same cast just out there slaying sketch after sketch after sketch. But the modern cast is really good, and they're still really doing inspired things every single week that they're on. And the reason I go into such detail with that is just because I'm always making these SNL comparisons is because I really do feel that they are similar beasts. And in the moment, the current rosters may not feel as special, but they really are working on, you know, some special stuff here and, you know, working really well in their own rights. So I think this was a show that I would be very happy to have paid only $40 to see. The first triple threat was definitely special. The rest of it was very much in the realm of what I might call comfort food. So I don't entirely disagree with you, Willis. This was not like a total blockbuster show. But you know, I enjoyed it at least sitting on my couch. But maybe this was kind of a couch kind of experience. I almost wish it was a SmackDown so I could ask if Wade Barrett did the DX stuff too, because when he was on NXT commentary during the commercial breaks, he would get up and he would do like the Hogan poses and stuff like that along with the crowd, and that was always fun. But you know, I will ask about Austin Theory, because in my opinion, he feels like a bigger star now than he did just a few weeks ago. And that is the kind of thing that we have historically seen crowds pick up on and start to cheer regardless of alignment. And it seems to me like Austin Theory's heel heat is intact, that the crowd still is booing him as WWE is positioning him. What was your read on that, Willis?
Well, when he came out, nobody really cared. Nobody actually really cared about the match. Nobody cared that he was fighting Farley. They basically made him into a chump since he's been on TV. So everybody knew he was going to win. They ooed and aahed at a couple of moments, but it was just a match that was just there. I feel like they probably sweetened the crowd a lot because a lot of times during the show, the crowd was dead.
Talk about the lowest point of the show in terms of crowd reaction, and then was there a definitive peak moment or just a, you know, kind of a few scattered about?
I think they made the mistake of bringing out the Usos and them at the beginning of the show. That's something they should have brought in during the middle of the show. So it was kind of, once they came out and they had their match, it kind of got low again until Seth came out. They really woke up when Seth came out.
Yeah, I believe that. People like sing-alongs. People like sing-alongs. Will, let's talk about what happened off-air, either before or and after Raw aired on USA Network.
I left as soon as the main event ended. I rolled out as soon as Alexa Bliss won her match. And they had a couple of matches for main event, but nobody was paying attention to that. Tamina was fighting the NXT, one of the NXT tag champions, and Cedric Alexander for some guy named Wild or something like that. It wasn't nothing really exciting for the main event show. And it seemed like nobody really cares about the OC coming out. They kind of felt kind of flat, and Mia Yim seemed like she's pointless at having them with her. So that match was all right, but nothing really truly stood out on the show.
Yeah, interesting. Talk about the how full the building was. I know you tweeted out a couple photos. Certainly behind the hard cam, it's pretty much always empty. Upper decks behind the hard cam are most often pretty empty, barring a rare, nearly packed house. But how about the rest of the arena? Of course, not counting behind the stage either. But in terms of anything that was opposite the hard camera, how full did the lower deck, middle, and upper decks get?
All of the 400 section was blocked off. They didn't have nobody sitting up in the 400 section. The 300 over by the other side from the camp, they had that section blocked off. And then people finally was coming in the middle section where they normally had the camera in front of, behind the hard cam. Some people trickled on in, so that got a little bit more full. But it was not a full house, and it was not a sold-out show at all. A lot of the shows that's been in that area the last couple of months, the AEW show and the WWE show, hasn't really been selling out.
Compare the AEW experience to WWE a little more. Talk about the differences in the makeup of the crowd and how they react to the wrestling versus the promos. I know you mentioned there's, families at WWE shows, and we don't see a lot of families at AEW shows. But beyond that, just talk about your experience and how you felt different at the shows and how the crowds reacted differently.
The AEW show, the crowd seems like they're in the show from basically to the beginning and end. A lot of times they're standing up during the parts that they're supposed to stand up with. They're into the bad guys, they're into the good guys. Because I went to, they had the Rampage, and then they had the Dynamite here. And then I also went to the Grand Slam up in New York. And the crowd was pretty nice for this. This show is the first WWE show I've been to since October of last year when they had the draft. And that show was a waste of time because all they did was talking and not really a lot of wrestling. The only exciting thing that really happened on that show was when Roman got beat up by Brock Lesnar. That's what's missing on the show. People like Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton and those people, if they would have been on the show, I think the show would have probably been more exciting.
Yeah, I bet it would have been, for sure. Tom, is there anything else you want to bring up to Willis?
Well, I know you already passed through it, so this is just a question of desperation here, but while you were talking, I did look up the main event spoilers. Was there anything that stood out, or anything memorable at all about specifically the NXT acts, Katana Chance and Trick Williams?
The Katana girl, she messed up the move during the match. So it kind of threw everything off. She won the match against Tamina, but nobody really cared. I don't even think nobody even knew who she was. They cheered because she won, but other than that, that's about it. And the Wild Dude, he did pretty good in the ring for what he was doing. Him and Alexander put on a decent match, but it was just the main event show.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
All right, Willis, is there anything else you want to chime in with, or we can let you get back to
you can let me go.
Your trip home?
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
You're welcome.
All right, if you want to be a future – yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks. If you want to be a future on-site correspondent, the way to go about that is email me at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And put the name of the city in the subject line if you can, along with the date. That just helps me stay organized. We don't always have on-site correspondence for all events, and that's fine, but we definitely want to sprinkle in maybe a little bit more than we have lately. So I'm putting a call out there for that, and that applies to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right, let's keep rolling through calls here. You can still join us if you're listening live, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you so we know you want to be on the show. All right, we'll go to Brad in Florida, formerly New York. Brad, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What did you think about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I am actually going to the SmackDown in Tampa on December 30th, right before New Year's Eve. So if you want me to be an on-site, I'd be happy to do it, just since you just mentioned
yeah.
it.
Yeah, if you don't mind, right, so I can stay organized with it. Email me with the city and date, and then I can, you know, get back to you when that week approaches.
I will, man. And Wade, you never email me back, man. It's like I'm sending it into a black hole. You gotta write me back. I'm just playing.
What have I?
I'm just playing around.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, it's true. It's true, but I am just kidding around. I don't care. I understand.
All right.
So look, okay, a few just my own observations, just some things that I think. So. You know, look, if you're not following the dirt sheets and you're not, like, in the know, quote-unquote, like, about, you know, Randy Orton's injury and everything like that, when Riddle's coming out there, and please forgive me, I tuned in about halfway through the on-site correspondence call, and I don't know if he brought this up, but
sure.
Riddle's standing there, you hear a subtle chant of Randy. I think they were chanting Randy behind him. I mean, I understand Kevin Owens comes out, and I get it. Anyone other than Randy Orton in that situation is going to be a downer. And it seems like, you know, it's against the Usos who took him out. It's a big show in Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, I mean, I've read that Randy's having a little setback with his back and everything like that. But do you agree with me that that's just a tough pill to swallow? Like, anyone other than that man, Randy Orton, is going to be a downer right there. And I you just got like, oh, man, it's Kevin Owens from the crowd, like, not who we want. You know what I mean? And I feel like just the way they set it up just really lent itself to that big time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, people watching who know it's not going to be Randy, based on, you know, reports of him having issues with his back still, you know, I'm thinking, okay, no, it'd be shocking if it was Randy, and those reports would be wrong, or he made a miraculous comeback. So I wasn't really expecting him. But yeah, Tom, I had the same feeling watching it. A lot of people are going to think, Elias was just there, was knocked out in a pre-match angle because they got Orton back, and it's going to be RK-Bro back together again. That said, KO is a good opponent, and he's got the history of the Bloodline and the history of Sammy and the issue of the Bloodline. So for me, it wasn't disappointing. It was certainly an upgrade over Elias, and I wasn't really expecting Orton. But I wonder if WWE was cognizant of how some people would look at that as a downer, and if there was a different way to handle it to avoid that.
I'm with you on every detail of that. And, you know, the storyline is absolutely there for it to be KO and for KO to be the exact right person to come out in that moment. But I think Brad is definitely onto something, that maybe it was as easy as just Riddle acknowledging it. Just, you know, hey, I'm really hoping for my bro, Randy, to come back, you know, soon. But in the meantime, I did find another tag team partner. Of course, he's acknowledging Elias as well. So find a streamlined way to work that in, and it probably would have been optimal. I did enjoy the unscripted moment of while the crowd is sort of quietly expecting Randy, there was one person that I'm guessing must have said KO, and before KO's music hit, Riddle points at that fan off screen and just says, hey, yeah, you know.
Nice. All right, I'll bring it back to you.
Yeah, just thought that was – and look, if the idea is to get, like, heat on the Bloodline by having Solo do this beatdown, ironically, I actually thought when Riddle was getting beat down in the ring, that might have been the swerve where Randy comes out to kind of save, you know, his buddy. And I really thought it was going to happen, even though, you know, you hear these reports that he's coming back. You still are like, well, maybe everything's kind of a big lie to make you think he's not coming back. Who knows? But, I mean, I thought that was still a possibility even at that point. And then no one came out to save Riddle, and obviously we saw what happened. But I was watching with my kids, and they were incredibly disappointed, thinking it was going to be Randy. But if you're watching that and the idea is to get you to hate the Bloodline of that whole segment, where Solo's beating him down. I understand Sammy wasn't in the ring with them, and neither were the Usos at that point. But, you know, Sammy does not make it easy to hate this group. I mean, it was actually like a stand-up comedy. Like, it was really funny, like, with the, you know, I'm an Usologist, and, you know, that, you know, being the tag team champions for X amount of days, now that's Usy. And this is Usy, and Solo beating down whoever, that was Usy. You know, it was so funny that, like, it's going to be really hard to get anyone to hate this group unless, obviously, you inevitably turn on Sammy and beat him down or something like that. So it's just, to me, it's going to be really hard with Sammy in the group to get any heat on this group, and I wanted your guys' opinion on that, too.
I think that's a great topic. Tom, I want to get your take on that, because they are – the way the Bloodline are being booked is as heels, but they're undeniably also being cheered, especially Sammy and Jimmy. They're happy when Jimmy and Jay are happy with Sammy. How do you think WWE is navigating this situation? And are they putting the babyface opponents in a tough position? I mean, I don't think Riddle and KO are at risk of being of the fans turning against them. Certainly not KO. And I don't think Riddle's at that point either. But it is awkward, even for Sheamus. You know, the crowd's cheering him, but much more into Sammy last week. Your take on that, and including what they did tonight with him.
I like the stand-up comedy correlation. It's like that was Usy is Sammy's version of you know you're a redneck win.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's as with anything, but, you know, in particular in this case, it's something that we'll be able to answer so much more clearly looking back, because right now, as we continually say about the Bloodline, it's an intricate enough ongoing storyline that I feel there are different reactions intended for each person in the group. And if Solo is supposed to be the most heelish and vicious of all of them, then great. And Brad made the astute observation that he was the only other one out there at that time. So we didn't get the added layers of, you know, what would that same situation be like if Jay was out there, or if Sammy and Jay were out there, or whatever it may be. Solo has not been characterized all that much to this point, other than just being stoic. So showing this side, I think, was, you know, he didn't really need anything yet, but, you know, more time goes on and you need to peel back the layers. So I think this was a layer peeled back on him. So he now has some characterization, and I think it just adds more intrigue to what they're doing with the group. And yes, overall the group is a heel act, but like you said, Wade, people are cheering for Sheamus, like for whatever reason, you know, I guess just good storytelling, although it's a very basic way to put it. It is working. And you know, it'll just become that much more of an inferno when Roman finally does turn face, since the crowd has been leaning that way with him anyway. And maybe when that happens, maybe someone like Solo, who is more overtly heel, is not aligned with Roman anymore.
Was there any development that intrigued you with Sammy and the dynamic with the Bloodline tonight? It seems like, to me, WWE, if not every time, way more often than not, drops a little hook, a little hint, a little development into, the dynamic, especially with Sammy. What jumped out tonight to you?
In particular tonight, what I was picking up on was actually an absence of that. And there may have been like a little, like when Sammy interjects bet, which I associate that phrase with people that I was introduced to that phrase by people that I do not care for and have been adversaries in my own professional life. So I every time I hear it, I just ugh. So I don't like saying it myself. But that weird tangent aside, because my brain was just forcing me in that direction. I did you notice Jay sort of like look over at him, and I was like, wait, was that a scowl or was that a oh that's our Sammy or wait what was that? But what I was really noticing here was, if it wasn't for Corey Graves at one point mentioning like, oh yeah, this is the new Sammy that has been accepted, and you know, weeks ago he might not have saved Jay from that tope. Without Graves narrating that, I didn't notice much difference. It's almost like War Games didn't happen. And you know, and it just and some random match opening a Monday Night Raw that I don't believe was announced ahead of time. It's not the Bloodlines show. You don't really need to do too much crazy story advancement here, but I didn't even notice the subtleties. It seemed like same old pre-War Games Bloodline to me.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed Sammy after Solo Sikoa threw Elias into the rack of metal barricades, and he goes, oh, damn, I think he's hurt, with a smile and a giggle. And it's like, that's where, I mean, people like that because they find Sammy entertaining, but it is an instance where Sammy's being heelish. You know, he's not this innocent, character who just wants to be with the cool kids. He is enjoying and getting wrapped up in a blindside attack and the injury of somebody who, you know, in theory is a sympathetic figure in Elias. And I'm continue to be intrigued with reading into how everybody is portrayed with an eye on where they're going to land sometime in 2023 when they're not all coming to the ring together. And so I'm looking for those hints. And I just think this is so well thought out. They're not going to have things that they can't answer for later, if that makes sense. Like, you know, is Sammy delighting in this going to be something it gets worse and worse. He breaks bad. And then all of a sudden there's a moment where he is introspective and feels guilty. Or is there enough history of Sammy as a heel where that's not really jumping out to us and won't until the moment where they break up. And so anyway, but yeah, I don't think dynamic wise there was as big of a moment as like Jimmy suggesting to Jay, you know, are you sure you're okay with Sammy not being forthright about the chat he had with KO? And it seemed like all of a sudden things are good, and then he's starting to stir trouble right away. Anyway, Brad, after that sidebar discussion, I want to go back to you for either follow-up or additional topics.
No, that was, I mean, great analysis, and that's why I love your guys' show. I love the show, and Tom, I love it when you're on as well. Getting back to like the way like wrestlers, like, you know, the wrestlers enter the ring and it's very formulaic and it's kind of like the same thing over and over again. Like every time you get the same entrance, the same mannerisms, the same shtick. I'm going to say the same thing that I say pretty much every single time that I call you, which is that this show really needs to be 2 hours. Like from your correspondent, yeah. like by the second hour, I believe, because I was watching on DVR, so I'm not that cognizant of the time, but I think Seth and Bobby was still was the second hour. And everyone was still really into it at that point. At least it felt that way. You know, like the crowd was really into Seth. People seemed to be standing and cheering and into it. And then as it goes on, that third hour just seems so dead, to the point that when Becky came out, even Becky's entrance, like, it just seemed very dead. This show is perfect at 2 hours. You could cut out, you know, some of the length of the time and some of the matches. You could cut out some of the OC stuff. You don't need to show the poker scene twice. You can cut, you know, you can cut some things back, and you could easily do it in 2 hours. It just, crowds are dead because of that. Like, it's just too long. And the third hour is just completely unnecessary. And I do want to say one thing about Alexa and Bianca, because we saw a few weeks ago, obviously Alexa was very sort of almost in her own world, daydreaming when Bianca was talking, when they were backstage and acting a little weird. And she was like, oh yeah, what they said. Yeah. She said something like that when Bianca was talking and the interviewer went to Alexa. But now we're going to have Alexa versus Bayley, and obviously Bayley's not going to win. They're not going to revisit Bianca and Bayley again. So, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, Becky's going to, you know, damage control is going to be ringside. Becky's going to somehow take them out, cause the distraction that causes Bayley to lose. And I'm pretty sure that at the end of that match, you'll have Becky kind of, you know, raising Alexa's hand in the ring or something like, we did it, you know, congratulations, Alexa. And Alexa just beats up Becky, and then she's heel, and then it's Becky, you know, Alexa versus Bianca. I'm 99% sure that's the way it's going down, and Alexa's going heel. Wanted to get your thoughts on that. And otherwise, guys, you know, thanks for taking the call, and very Usy show tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tom, what do you think about that, and did Brad just ruin, like, 3 months of programming?
I don't know about 3 months, but maybe 3 weeks. Yeah, I think that's more or less a beat. Well, I'm hedging, but, you know, beat for beat what I am expecting to see. And, you know, I felt satisfied with the development tonight, even though I felt like they tipped off where they were going for most of it until the little bit of a twist at the end. And I know this is probably, this is not really an analogous comparison, but what it kind of reminded me of was when a big star is out there and you know that they're just going to win. Like, you know that they belong in the main event, they belong in that championship match, but something gets in the way, and it makes sense, and it gets the crowd behind them, because, you know, it's like, obviously they should be there. Come on. And it reminded me of the McMahon-Helmsley era and The Rock, who obviously should be in the main event against Triple H at WrestleMania 2000. And every week he's out there with another reason, like, yep, this is, I'm going to beat the Dudley boys in a handicap match tonight, and that's going to get me in. And then he does that at the crossover segment, and then Triple H comes out and he's like, ah, Rocky, you know, I was thinking, we're actually going to make you wrestle Big Show later on tonight in the main event. And, Shane McMahon's going to be there helping him out, and just like constantly stacking it the deck against the person who, you know, the crowd is knows should be in that match. So, I think Becky is absolutely a popular enough person to have the crowd on her side in that precise regard. But, you know, again, as we always say, yeah, Brad's observation about the 2 hour show is apt. And I mean, like, I actually enjoyed the OC versus Alpha Academy and Baron Corbin, but it did just feel like something that was filling time on the show. It was amusing, but it wasn't really accomplishing anything.
And, you know, we're pro wrestling fans, and good pro wrestling matches should be entertaining, not just time fillers. If the story of the match feels relevant or athletically entertaining in a way that you know, that fits our style of what we look for as viewers and fans. And if you're watching WWE programming, you're obviously in it for the characters and the stories, but you're also in it for the wrestling. But if WWE, at Paul Levesque especially, is stretched thin, and matches are going longer than the audience's attention span, which I think is what's happening, is especially with the two commercial break matches, there's that feeling, okay, we're going to get things off to a red hot start, get you interested, cut to a break, come back. That's when the time filler happens. Then they go to another break and you come back, and then something happened during the break or right afterwards, and then boom, they go to the finish. And you start, you're used to a certain cadence and pace on TV matches. And that middle section, I think, you know, sparks thoughts with me. It did with Brad, and I know others. This is just a time filler match. They are trying to fill 3 hours. And I do not think we would have that feeling if the show were 2 hours. Now, that's not that I never have that feeling on SmackDown, but on Raw, it does feel like, you know, a couple times a week these days that's happening. Now, I long complained about TV matches being abnormally and frustratingly short with wrestlers who are competitive with one another. I think what we'd see eliminated more so if Raw went to 2 hours is just matches that don't feel like they've been built up, that they were kind of thrown together at 3 p.m. because they didn't know what else to do, and then they sort of manufactured a reason for the match to happen. And we sort of had that with the poker tournament tonight, resulting in the Corbin, Gable, Otis versus OC match. Some of it too is just like with the OC, it's like Anderson and Gallows are just sort of a, you know, treadmill act. I mean, they're in the same place. There's not a lot of hope they're going to rise. And so that hurts too. So I think a lot of things play into it. If WWE announced they were moving around to 2 hours, I think viewership would go up. I think fans, the vast majority of fans would be happy because they know they'd get a tighter, better show. Tom, anything else you want to add on that topic?
Yeah, no, you covered it. And I think Mia Yim is in the same place there with Anderson and Gallows. I don't know about AJ. Like, he feels like he maybe has just a few months ago, I was saying he feels like he has another world title run in him. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking, yeah, he maybe feels that way. I'm not sure. But yeah, those three definitely, I feel like they were brought back for depth and depth only. I will say I tend to be forgiving of, I don't know, like you get the Mustafa Ali thing, and I'm just like, okay, they're really just trying to give an excuse for this match to happen. I appreciate they're at least giving it that much, but that really did feel like just an excuse. So I appreciate it that much more when they do something like the poker tournament or JBL's poker invitational that he later indicated was a tournament with a $50,000 buy-in. He said five dimes.
I think that's five times 10.
Yeah.
I
appreciate when the writers seemed at least a little inspired when you're thinking of, okay, what have we got here? We've got a guy that sort of has like a gambling element to his gimmick in Corbin. We've got a guy who never makes facial expressions. Oh, Dexter Lumis has a natural poker face. Let's put him in a poker game.
Totally.
I appreciate that. And then the idea of, like, well, let's get Chad Gable in there, and his whole thing throughout each segment is going to be that he's really proud of folding every time, that he knows I think in every segment he said,
yep,
like, and very smugly, and I'm going to fold. See, that's how it's done. And that just amused me that they,
yes,
you know, they sank their teeth in.
And no, I agree. I think there was more to explore, but I have a soft spot for Dana Brooke, and I kind of wish she won a hand just so we could sort of see if she'd be nearly as excited about that as she was becoming 24/7 champion. I think there was a little bit unexplored when it comes to that. Now, maybe I should hesitate to encourage it, but it seems like they could have done a little bit more than what they did. It's fun to see wrestling characters who we only see in wrestling settings in a poker situation and see what the wrestlers come up with for themselves or along with the writers. And yeah, the Gable thing was fun. Dexter having a poker face, Corbin thinking he can read him, Corbin cheating, having cards up his sleeve, literally fall out of his sleeve. I thought it was a fun sports entertainment-y way to break up the show. And it did allow them to, you know, come up with sort of manufactured argument that led to the six-man, which helped them fill, you know, another 20 minutes of the show or so.
Yeah, my favorite Dana Brooke moment tonight, not that there were too many, but I liked when Dominic decided to walk away from the table while sweeping a bunch of chips into his hand.
Yeah.
And off screen, you can just hear her go, well, that's not fair.
Totally. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. No, we're getting, I think she is. She is. No, I'm absolutely with you with having a soft spot for her. And I remember the moment on NXT when I became sold on her, and we never really saw that version of her make it to the main roster, but I'm looking forward to revisiting that. I imagine that we're within a year away from it on 8 years back, that she will debut, and at first I remember feeling like, okay, she's a power lifter that Triple H just really liked, and we're seeing a weakness in the type of person that he likes to put on the developmental track here. But she was one of those people that really dedicated herself to improving. And I remember the match when I was like, ooh, she's got it. Now I'm a fan.
Let's bring in an email here. We'll go back to calls too. But Alan of Cambridge, Ontario says, I'm only an hour into Raw, but something I thought of is, in the last 6 months, Matt Riddle and Rhea Ripley have had the biggest momentum swings in all of WWE. Riddle was on such a high during RK-Bro, and shortly after Randy Orton was injured, I thought there was a small chance Riddle could have beat Reigns in their title match. He's lost a lot of the appeal since then, in my opinion. And with Ripley, it's the opposite. She is teaming with Nikki A.S.H., and now she's one of the most interesting characters they have. They should keep her and Becky apart until Mania. I feel like the time has come and gone for Becky versus Ronda. This version of Rhea versus Becky is a lot more interesting to me. Thanks for the great podcast. What do you think of that, Tom? Are we at a point where would you take Rhea Ripley over Ronda Rousey right now if you only got to use each of them for the next 2 years, a similar number of dates?
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. You know, however long ago, maybe as long as 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, it seemed like, oh, okay, WrestleMania 39, it's going to be Becky versus Ronda. You know, collision course is set. And I think I've just I never really was enamored with Ronda in WWE, but I've just become so the opposite thereof that I don't know. I mean, it depends on how it's presented on the show, but I just think personally it would be less exciting than the fresh idea of the rising star of Rhea against Becky, who still very much feels like the most popular babyface in I think in the company, you know, regardless of division or what show they're on. Yeah, I think the character chemistry is absolutely there in just the little stare down moments that they've had already. And yeah, I definitely keep them apart. I agree with the momentum swing thing. Riddle really seemed cooled off for quite a while there, then heated up with RK-Bro and really just, I don't know about ice cold, but he's pretty close to ice cold right now. I don't have any ideas, but I'm curious to see what this injury angle is going to lead to for him. Hopefully something that helps freshen him up, because this is a guy that at one point, you know, I and many other people were saying should, you know, wrestle Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and he feels so far away from that. But Rhea Ripley, on the other hand, even though she has been on the upswing, she is somebody that I have viewed for a long time as just being totally undeniable. So even during her downswing, which was due to some kind of, was it a concussion issue, some kind of medical issue there, I never felt like she was on the wrong track. They were still keeping her on TV. She felt like an important character, and now she feels like one of the most important characters, and I think she will continue to varying degrees for many years.
The dynamic with Ripley and Dominic is a lot of fun. It continues to be a lot of fun. The little whisper that they shared in a private giggle that didn't mean anything. It just wasn't like I don't think it was part of any plot development. It was just part of the character development. Hey, I got something to tell you, and it's our secret, and it played into the resentment fans feel about those two. And then just Ripley holding her own against Becky like that. There, I think a year ago she would have gulped. She would have broken her stare. She might have felt like legitimately intimidated by the moment. And she's got the wind at her back right now, and she held her ground with Becky, and it felt like a big match in the making. So I'm with Alan on that. And it's fun to see you know, people rise. Ripley was a star in NXT and just felt overwhelmed with Vince McMahon and the way that his management style was so different than she was used to in NXT. I remember talking to people backstage about, you know, what Ripley was going through and, you know, not to get like too detailed, but she was overwhelmed and stressed out when she first got to the main roster. And it just was less organized. There was less handholding. You know, it was live and she just felt pressure, and Vince McMahon was, like I said, very different in performing for him versus, you know, Paul Levesque and Shawn Michaels and that those people. So, you know, I mean, she's in a better place right now. And, you know, people like working in WWE now better than under Vince McMahon. It's just it's a more forgiving atmosphere. They feel motivated. They don't feel like they can be disrespectful or lazy or phone it in. They want to work hard, but they don't work in fear like they used to. And so seeing Ripley's journey and her growth is a big thing. And I think Alan, you know, points out two people who crossed paths a few months ago in Riddle going down and Ripley going up. But I like you, Tom, I'm curious what this injury angle is. Solo's first hip attack just missed, but the second one with the chair, it looked like, oh, that could hurt someone. So does this just set up, you know, a couple opponents for Solo to plow through, you know, a grudge match with Riddle and a more featured match with KO, or is something else going on? And, you know, we don't know yet, but we'll find out.
The camera angle on that chair deal was definitely good. Made it look worse than it was. I'm so excited to see, and it's going to take years to see, but to see what the Shawn Michaels NXT going to Triple H's WWE will be like, because you have to imagine what I always called on the Daily Cast when I was doing that was the handshake or lack thereof between Triple H's NXT and Vince's WWE, because we saw so many great stories and great developmental journeys on NXT not make it in the ways that we felt they should. And I'm somebody who constantly repeats, and I've said it to you a bunch of times, that, you know, yeah, not everyone, no matter how highly we think of them, not everybody can be in the main event. But then we'd see somebody as with the brilliance of Tyler Breeze just almost entirely squandered. Bailey for a while there, just for example, and it's just and the Rhea Ripley example, just in more of a behind the scenes context. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see if that handshake has more of a through line, especially now that commentary is doing things like Asuka's in the ring and they're referencing how feared she was in NXT, perhaps the most feared person ever in NXT, as Corey Graves put it. So they're referencing back to that history now. And and I could go on and on with their current focus on college athletes. It's over indie wrestlers and the bonds that those new recruits seem to be sharing with one another and the developmental journeys that they are on. But there's a different podcast on VIP for that.
And Candace saying, I'm new to Raw, but I have a history with EO and Dakota. I just don't know if you would hear that under Vince McMahon's auspices. You know, I think Vince would be like, whoa, what is that? What are you talking about? The audience doesn't know that. Don't leave people confused. And, you know, I think the audience knows it or can figure it out at that level. I mean, it doesn't mean don't introduce the characters. It doesn't mean don't fill us in on what that background is. But I think wrestlers naturally acknowledging history that falls under the umbrella of WWE programming should be a given and should be encouraged.
Absolutely.
All right, so we'll go next to air code 732. 732, go ahead, state your name and where are you calling from?
How you doing? Brian, New Jersey.
Hey, Brian, good to hear from you. Yeah, what'd you think of Raw tonight?
Truth be told, not a huge wrestling fan, but I had to settle an argument with a buddy, and I figure you guys know what you're talking about. It won't take long. Hopefully, you can help.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Ravishing Rick Rude was my favorite. I'm heterosexual, but he was my favorite when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Long story short, there was a gang that started in my local neighborhood, a fake gang, bullshit, you know. Sorry, I shouldn't swear. Half buttocks gang, and they were all naming themselves after wrestlers, and I called myself Ravishing Rick Rude, and I started doing the hands behind the head and gyrating and all that happy horse stuff just to be funny. And we were talking today because we hadn't seen each other in 30 years. I don't know why I brought that up. I'm intoxicated. And he said that Ravishing Rick Rude used to wrestle under another name after Ravishing Rick Rude. And I said, no, he didn't. And he said, yes, he did. He came back into the WWF or WWE, whatever, under another name. And I said, no, he had not. And we figured, you guys are experts. You can settle that argument for us because this is valuable because the winner gets to punch the living dog hell out of the other guy's ribs.
Okay, so, Brian, I want to clarify. You're not a wrestling fan, but you're live streaming our show. And
I was,
decades
I,
ago...
I was a yeah. wrestling fan, diehard.
Yeah.
I was a Hulkamaniac as a kid to the point where I don't know where are you guys from?
I'm based in Minnesota.
Okay.
In Orlando here.
There you go. Howdy, Orlando. I was just down there last week, actually. But ShopRite Supermarket, I don't know if they have those. I'm pretty sure they don't. It's pretty mostly Northeast. They have yellow ShopRite.
Yeah, we don't have ShopRite.
Remember
here.
The plastic?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember the plastic bags we used to were allowed to have until Trump grabbed the lady or whatever? I don't know what happened, but they got rid of plastic bags. I used to take the yellow plastic bags and with scissors I would cut the bottom off, and I was so small at the time, that's how young of a kid I was, I would put it on as a tank top and wear this plastic tank top all for an hour until Hulk came out just so I could rip it off while he ripped his off. That's how cool I was.
Totally.
I was
okay,
the coolest
so,
6-year-old ever. Anyway, so then I became an Ultimate Warrior fan. Then I got it to Tatanka, and then I found that it was fake. And I kissed a lady. And the first time I kissed a girl, I stopped watching television.
All right. I asked. So why are you live streaming this? How did you happen to call us if you didn't watch Raw and we're doing a Raw Fo show?
Well, because
that, I'm intrigued.
Because my buddy's a big wrestling fan. Gotcha. And he sent me the link and he goes, listen to the show because we were arguing about whether Ravishing Rick Rude was anything after Ravishing.
Okay.
I remember he was Rick Rude, R-O-O-D.
Yes, okay.
And I remember he was WCW Phantom.
Yeah, so no, Rick Rude, and correct me if I'm forgetting something, Tom, Rick Rude did not wrestle under any other name.
No, the best that I've got is that Shawn Michaels referred to him as his insurance policy upon his WWF return, but he was still Rick Rude.
Yeah. He was Rick Rude when he was Rick R-O-O-D when he was jobbing in Georgia.
Yeah, that's when he first started.
Then he, you know, was a champion and world-class championship wrestling out of Dallas and had a run in the WWF and obviously the famous, trunks, the airbrush trunks and all the different things, he did with that classic character. All right, Brian, so bet is settled.
I get to hit my friend in the body, which I probably will break his ribs because I punch pretty hard.
All right, well, I don't want to be party to that, so we will not leave the microphone
while we
hear someone.
It's aiding and abetting no matter what you say. He's not going to call the cops. Don't worry about it. He's not a snitch.
Well, it's not so much that, just it's like live, you know, podcasting. People would know.
No, this whole thing was fictitious, by the way. None of this ever happened. I don't even know any people or Rudes.
All right. Sounds good. Tom, I figured that was going to be an adventure from the opening few seconds of Brian when it was.
Did he say that that grocery store was using plastic bags until Trump grabbed a lady?
Yeah.
Okay. I believe it.
I don't know what to do with it. I didn't know what to do with it. Little detour adventure there. All right. We'll go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, you got a hard act to follow. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
I'll focus on Raw tonight. Anything that other caller was saying was really kind of boring me. I'll say so anyway.
Kyle, I was watching during that call our switchboard with people on listening in shrink. Just They were just hanging up left and right. I was like, I was more interested than the listeners. Like, I mean, people are just peeling off the show with our last caller. So that it may or may not make the final cut. It's one of the benefits of listening live is you never know what's going to happen. All right, go ahead, Kyle. What did you think, Ross?
Yeah, so what I really wanted to get into was the whole Becky, Bailey, Rhea situation. From watching Becky and Bailey and Rhea, it feels like to me, of course, Becky's the ultimate baby face, the most bigger star than Bianca Belair, like I kind of mentioned last week. It's evident every single time she's going to be on TV. It's like, wow, Becky is number one and Bianca is number two, as far as I'm concerned, involving baby faces. And because to me, I was saying the fact that they're teasing a lot of Becky and a Bailey feud and a Becky Rhea feud. I was like, I'm super invested in those two specific matches than anything that Bianca did with Bailey in particular, because she didn't face Rhea yet. So I can only go off of with Bailey. It's her feud with Bailey started with Bianca. I wasn't all that interested in it in terms of the build up to it. Like I said last week, the only match I found Bianca and Bailey that I really enjoyed was their ladder match at Extreme Rules. But other than that, their feud was not that great at all. And I feel like with Bailey and Becky, what Becky said tonight was true. But also, I was thinking to myself, well, yes, damage control is, I mean, Io and Dakota are the champions, but they still don't mean anything. And Bailey doesn't mean anything because she has been a loser since she came back. So, and I enjoy, like, their back and forth. And it's crazy they never have a match together because they weren't on different brands. So I'm kind of glad they're doing it now. And I'm looking forward to that. And also looking forward to what to do with Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch, that little whenever that's going to happen too. So it feels like to me that the top two heels are going after Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley is like in the back burner. So do you think that sooner rather than later that they need to separate these two faster than before Bianca becomes any more damaged in terms of the way she's not been booked really well? So what do you think about that situation?
Tom, I'll throw to you.
I mean, of course, it's purely subjective. I feel like Bianca is coming off like a star who's at the top of all of this, even if she only had one little backstage interview tonight. Of course, I'm you know, historically I've been an appreciator of Bianca, and I feel her journey has been an organic one, and it's been really rewarding to see her go from her beginning on NXT to being, you know, on top of the division now. But yeah, I guess, I don't know. It sounds like you're in favor of the direction that they're going now versus, you know, at least in comparison to where they were just a month or two ago. As far as trying to move quickly through it to get to the more exciting stuff, I mean, we're what, 4 months away from WrestleMania? I think with Royal Rumble in between there, I think there's plenty of time to get through a nice little Bayley feud here and then heat things up for Mania between Becky and Rhea, presuming that's the plan. I think it's a nice little calendar here that we've got.
Yeah, Kyle, back to you.
So I just wanted to, from that, I was thinking to myself too. I was like, well, yeah, I was just watching this, and it was like, okay, we're gonna have Alexa and Bianca some, what is it happening next week, or whatever. So I forget what it is happening, and I think Alexa's gonna turn heel on that, which would be good because Alexa, I don't know what they're doing with her and this whole Bray Wyatt tease, whatever. I would just get to that too, because where is that leading to? Because they're on different brands still. But for some reason they keep flashing the logo every time Alexa's near stage or whatever. So are they coming back together? I kind of hope not, because Alexa doesn't really, I already went through that experiment was before with Bray and Alexa, and I just didn't think Alexa needs to be a part of that anymore. So. I'm all in favor of Alexa as a heel, and I think maybe what she faces Bianca, it'll turn her to a heel. It'll be a great good thing, but her going back to being with Bray Wyatt, I don't want to see that. Do you think that's is leading to them teaming back up again?
Tom, I'll throw to you again on that.
Yeah, I think and Kyle, I don't believe they have said when the presumed Alexa versus, because you know I believe Wade is
well,
as well.
Whenever
you can correct me if I'm wrong, Wade, but. Right. I am indeed presuming that Alexa is the one who will move on, as at least one of our prior callers is also presuming. But yeah, next week will be Alexa versus Bayley to then move on to wrestle Bianca, perhaps the following week, but I don't think they've said yet. But yeah, I think that she'll lose clean. I think that she'll break down after the match, and that's when something spooky will happen, or maybe, I don't know, maybe she just leaves and we don't see her for a while, or maybe some spooky music will play and she'll wander off, or maybe Bray himself will be there. But the thing that is the major question mark for me is, at what point in Bray's storyline does Alexa rejoining him make sense? I do feel it makes sense for her, because perhaps it's tough to tell how much of her apparent lack of motivation in her current role is deliberate, because you know we've known the hints have been there to presume that she's known for quite a while now that this is where it's heading, and they're talking about it on commentary, so it's definitely part of the character. But even before those hints were there, she just sort of seemed like she was obligatory Alexa Bliss at this point. You know, she was great before, and now she's just kind of there. So it's hard to know exactly how much of that was intentional from the get-go, but it does seem like she prefers the person prefers showing off her acting chops as the creepy doll hugging Bray Wyatt sidekick. So going back to that is absolutely what we're looking at. It's just a matter of when, not where, but when does that puzzle piece fit in with what Bray is doing right now, because Bray is still very much in the introductory phases of what his whole new thing is going to be.
Yeah, Kyle, I don't have anything to add to that. Anything else you want to bring up?
It's just I think next thing I was putting on tape beyond the women is this Rollins and Lashley, and where that's headed to me. It's interesting, because to me also too, because of them three together with Theory and Lashley and Rollins was so, it was, you know, that was going back to the Survivor Series, but now we have this Lashley Rollins feud going. What do you think that's heading to? And you know what? And it seems to me because it seemed to me that Lashley was coming off as a heel, because Rollins is the top male babyface, at least on Raw. And so what do you think that's leading to? And then what do you think about that brawl that happened with the two of them?
Yeah. Tom, how do you feel about the U.S. title situation, especially Seth and Lashley, and how those characters are playing off of each other, and how you think the fans are being directed to feel about them?
The last part of that is a big question, as we talked about on the Survivor Series post show, and as we always seem to talk about with Seth Rollins, it's difficult to know exactly how he's intending his character to be perceived, and it's another one of those situations where I personally feel the characters are the audience is engaging enough with the characters, booing Theory. Excited to see Lashley, really excited to see Rollins, it is tough to tell how much of that is Rollins himself and how much of it is just like, oh, this is the part where we do the sing-along. But
I'd be insecure if I was a wrestler and had a catchy song like that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, is it my song or is it me?
Yeah, I always wondered that about the Yes chant as well. I guess that's just one other example, but there are multiple examples. But I always have to remind myself something that you've said over and over, Wade, that historically throughout wrestling, when you've got the clear heel and clear babyface, it leads to more money, more ticket sales, more merch sales. It's just, that is always, it's tried and true. That's what works. As far as the television program, these characters do interest me and I do see the audience engaging with them, but are they engaging with them to the level of like, oh, I'm now going to go live buy Bobby Lashley's t-shirt. I'm not sure. So that remains a question mark. But as far as Bobby Lashley, I am optimistic about what happened with him on this show, because when he made his entrance, I was thinking, okay, I mean, this segment is to build up next week's number one contender match, and really all of this is just about Austin Theory. He is not present in this scene, but this is all about eventually building up Austin Theory. This isn't really about Bobby Lashley himself. And then he speared Petey Williams, the Canadian Destroyer, and Adam Pearce got all upset about it. And Lashley said, make sure that no other officials are around me because it might happen again. And I'm like, okay, we're going to get Lashley the monster, who's being – when Rollins was goading Lashley about Lesnar, I was thinking, is this really the old chestnut that they want to go to about this? But it ended up working in retrospect, because you've got Lashley being goaded with his ongoing rivalry with a monster, Brock Lesnar, and now seemingly being set on a path where he's going to turn into a monster himself. And they may not continue to mention Lesnar throughout this, but the impetus of it was it ended up making sense. And so I'm now excited to see what other officials Lashley is going to tear through. I think this is going to be a good veering off for his character from his involvement in this United States title picture.
The comments from Seth about Lesnar and, hey, you lost to him, but hey, we all have. I'm not sure how I feel about a guy who's not on TV very often getting built up as better than the people who you're currently watching on TV.
That definitely struck me at that moment. He's like, we've all been there. I'm like, oh, so this is a television show full of people who have lost to Brock Lesnar. Okay, gotcha, Zach.
Exactly, yeah. I was just like, oh, man, I know you're headed somewhere, but that's not ideal. All right, Kyle, back to you for anything else.
Oh, yeah, so I already get to Candice LeRae and with her, you know, like many feet with their control somewhat, you know, they're going to have she's facing the Robinson, she's facing EO next week or something, I think. So I think I was, you know, watching this, I was like, okay, we have majority of the top women on tonight's show being, you know, being in, trying to get involved in the women's championship situation, which was fine. But then you have this thing with Candice LeRae trying to also feed it with damage control. Like everyone has a problem with damage control, and you know, and damage control is not, and like I said before, hasn't really been all that interesting since Bayley came back from SummerSlam. They have been, it's not been working. I don't know why it hasn't. Because I like at least, you know, Dakota, I think they're really good in the ring, but teaming with Bayley hasn't been working for them, and even them winning the titles with not having a really clear. Not having a full division in the first place is a whole other thing. But the whole dynamic with Candice and damage control, what do you think that's leading to? Is that going to lead to, go back from SmackDown, having Liv Morgan and taking Knox team together? You think Candice is going to find a partner or just going to be, or what do you think they're going to do with Candice LeRae and with this damage control feud of anything like that?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought that through, but what is the sort of end game or progression you expect to see, Tom?
Boy, the true answer is that I have no idea, and I honestly think it's even weird that they're acknowledging the whole Gargano family tree on TV and everything, even though, yeah, that was done on NXT, but it was also at a very strange time in NXT, especially yeah. for the Garganos. But I'm going to go out on a limb, but maybe it's not going out on a limb so much, and say that, yes, Candice will find a tag team partner, and it will be Indy Hartwell's call-up. Dexter Lumis just recently appeared on an NXT house show where he reunited yet again with Indy Hartwell. And if they are committed to doing this Gargano family tree thing, Indy Hartwell is a part of that. Triple H clearly likes that whole thing. So let's look at this as Indy's impending call-up. She is tomorrow night involved in a last chance match to get into the Iron Survivor Challenge on Saturday. But for whatever it's worth, she's been pretty consistently losing on house shows to Roxanne Perez. So I forget who else is in the last chance
to,
match.
Did Josh lose to what was called last week as well? To Roxanne last week on NXT as well, I think.
Yeah, probably. Usually the stuff we see on the house shows ends up on TV and they're, getting some reps in. So when it's going out to hundreds of thousands of people, they've had some practice first. Yeah.
I kind of like that idea too, in terms of having the, I did enjoy Candice and Indy as a tag team, but that they look look good together as a tag team, but to kind of work together as well, good as well. So I kind of, that's just kind of a good thing. Cause you have these tag team championships, you brought them back for some reason, and you know, with a limited of tag teams that they already have so far, there's only it would probably be like three at that point, which is not enough, but you know, to really decide to bring these titles back. So we'll see what happens with that dynamic. But I guess that's it for me. We'll see what happens with the whole bloodline thing is still going on, which I don't know how long that's gonna last for, but who knows. But after that, that's the additional call, though.
All right, cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate the call.
Yep.
Anything you want to add to any of that, Tom, before I move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Let's go to Zach in Texas. He goes, Becky was great as always, the best part of the show, in fact. But I have a serious question. What the hell was that finish to the Ollie Theory match? Doesn't matter what you think of Ali. There's no way it's logical to have Dolph Ziggler Bigfoot Ali as a returning babyface to challenge Theory. If Hunter honestly believes the crowd is more into Ziggler than Ali, he's deeply delusional. It's also extremely unfair to Ali to continue to put him in a position to look like a chump. That he's been defined down is no reflection on his talent, his fan support, or how genuinely good a person he is. That was I haven't really been able to unravel what the thinking was there. Are they up to something, or is it just bad judgment?
Yeah, if we didn't get to it, I was planning on asking you at the end, so do you think Ziggler is actually going to get a U.S. title shot out of this, or do you think he was just there as another body for Theory to cast aside? Because even though he interfered, he ended up, crumpled up on the ground just like Ali by the end of it, if I'm remembering correctly. So it just seems like Ali and Ziggler are nuisances, and in the middle of this this push to make the United States title feel like the biggest title on the brand with all this prestige behind it, you know, Ali and Ziggler are not. It's the same old thing with Ziggler all the time. We all see how talented he is. We all were really hot for him at a certain time. And for a few years now, and on and off for a few years before that, every time he shows up, you're just like, oh, this guy again. Is stand-up comedy not working out well enough for you, pal? Because I don't know. It just sounds mean, but I rolled my eyes when he showed up. So for once, I'm with Zach on one of his emails.
yeah.
And I'm kind of hoping that we don't get a Theory Ziggler feud out of this.
Is it just a manufactured triple threat thing where Ali's the babyface, Theory's the heel, Ziggler is sort of this something, and I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like a U.S. title match ending with a wrestler interfering and the announcers not being more outraged at what Ziggler just did. I mean, Ali wanted that asked for the match, got it. It was high stakes for him, and it's kind of unforgivable. I mean, if this were real, it's kind of unforgivable what Ziggler did, unless he's a heel who has an issue with Ali. So I don't get it. That was an absolute head scratcher. for me. And I'm genuinely curious what the follow-up is, because I can't imagine what would make sense of it after the fact, unless it's, you know, Ziggler has some issue with Ali, but even that's not the way to go about it. It cheapened the idea of a title match because they didn't treat it like a big enough deal when it got cut short like that.
Yeah, the only person who was upset about it was Ali. Even Ziggler was like, you couldn't hear what he was saying, but when Ali was like, "What the hell, man?" Ziggler was his body language was saying something like, "What? Come on, I'm here helping you out." That just seems to be what he was, or maybe he was saying, "Yeah, you were gonna lose anyway." I don't know.
The only thing I picked up on, Tom, is he said, I think he said, "I did it for all of us." But it also could have been Ziggler thinking he wasn't gonna be picked up on the mic and he was just saying gibberish, you know, I mean, like, it's Ziggler.
Right.
You know what I mean? He might thought I need to say things, but no one's going to hear it. So I'll just say things. But there was a bunch I couldn't pick up on, but there's got to be follow-up on that. You can't have Ali just go about his business now getting cheated out of U.S. title opportunity.
Yeah. I enjoyed, the backstage segment before that when Austin Theory said, "Okay, you get your match, but when I beat you, I never want you here I never want to hear you say the word opportunity again."
One thing I noticed, and I don't know if it's a trend, but they filmed Byron Saxton doing backstage interviews where they showed him first approaching wrestlers to interview them. And I have, for somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 years, been complaining about WWE going to shots of wrestlers walking backstage for no reason. No reason at all. The wrestlers are ignoring the camera. And then suddenly they get accosted by somebody off camera to ask them a question, interview them. And in my mind, I want everything to be logical. And so why were you filming that? Like, was it planned that the interviewer is going to interrupt them and ask them a question? Why not just show the interviewer first and show them approaching the wrestler? To me, that feels more natural. And I don't think the majority of people are consciously thinking this, but I think the more that you can make wrestling feel like there's this thing happening and we're just here to film it, as opposed to there's this heavily scripted thing where when we're going to brawl in the concession stands, we're going to move all the fans off to the side and we're going to have a stripped down concession stand, or like AEW, that super fake popcorn table they set up. And it's going to be obviously pre-planned, or when there's the roaming camera in the crowd that's never there except when wrestlers have this ostensible impromptu brawl into the crowd. So to me, like, clean that stuff up. And one of the things you can clean up is just have the interviewer's job be to be filmed while they walk up to wrestlers and ask them questions. And they did that tonight. And I don't remember that being the format before. So I am, from a pet peeve, or, you know, just it's more than a pet peeve, I genuinely believe it is better for the immersive experience to have the production feel more sports-like and less orchestrated. I was happy to see that, and I will be even happier if I see it for the next few weeks. Did you pick up on that at all?
You know, not consciously, but it's the absence of irritants that you're talking about. I'm the type of person that will try to forgive these kinds of things, like the concession stand brawl that you're talking about. My mind immediately goes, like, I notice it, but then I immediately go to, oh, well, maybe venue security is just really on top of things, and they saw that, you know, they were paying attention to the show and they saw that maybe some violence was going to spill out to the public area, so they cleared it ahead of time, and I can believe that. Or maybe there's a different reason why that area of the concourse got closed off. Maybe there was some issue in the bathroom that's spilling out. I don't know. But then my mind is on that, and I'm distracted and I'm rationalizing, and it does lessen the show. Cheapen the show. So not being distracted by those irritants is a positive, even if we don't consciously notice it. And Roven Byron could probably be its own YouTube program.
maybe. By the way, how do you think Byron is doing in this role?
I think he's doing real well. You know, right before he got removed from commentary, and he is still on commentary on NXT Level Up, for what that's worth, with Sudhu Shah and occasionally Matt Camp, who in their own different ways are doing very well, I believe. But yeah, he was still on Raw when I was calling 2022 the year of the Byronissance, because after so many years of just looking at him like the filler commentator, and I didn't really get what he was doing. I suddenly got Byron Saxton and I started to really appreciate his role on the show. And then he wasn't on the show as much, but he has at least been able to translate his brand of enthusiasm to his new role.
I like that. His brand of enthusiasm. I think Byron's doing a good job. I do. I think he's good in this role, and it's working for him. Thomas, is there anything else you want to add from Raw before we wrap up here?
No, I think we covered it all, Wade.
Yeah, looking forward to the Ric Flair documentary. Hope it's good. Coming up the day after Christmas, they advertised that. And then they substituted because of Drew's not being medically cleared. They advertised Butch with Sheamus on Friday against the Usos. So that was a little news coming out of the show, announcing to the Raw audience that forced change. And I don't really have any other thoughts on it other than I think it'll be a good match with Butch in there.
Yeah, it will. And whatever Drew's situation is, hopefully he'll be back soon. The tweet that they put on the screen just said, I hate to miss a show or any show. He seemed to indicate that, seemed to imply that it's just going to be the one show. So hopefully that is indeed the case.
Yep. All right, cool. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Always fun,
Wade. Thank you.
Absolutely.